Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Today, we are joined by Karim Asafo, former sporting director of Venezuela's two biggest clubs, Deportivo Táchira and Caracas Football Club. Karim is now a highly successful agent for Venezuelan football players based between Caracas and Miami. It's a pleasure to have you here today, Karim. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thanks, Jordan, for having me in your podcast. I appreciate that. And I'm very happy to speak about Liga FV and Venezuelan football.
It's really great for us to have somebody that not only is fluent in English, but also has a long history with the league in various roles, because you're perfectly placed to talk about how things have changed over the past 20, 30 years even, and specifically a few hot points in Venezuelan football at the moment that I know you have opinions on, for example, the juvenile rule, which we'll get into later. But I'd like to start by talking about your history with Venezuela's two biggest clubs, like I said, Deportivo Táchira and Caracas Football Club, where for listeners that aren't too familiar with Venezuelan football, being the sporting director of those two clubs would be like going from Manchester United to Manchester City, or from Liverpool to Everton. So let's start with that. And let's start, because Deportivo Táchira are the current reigning champions of Venezuelan football, let's start with that. What were your experiences like as the sporting director of Deportivo Táchira?
I start too young. Now I'm an old man, but I start too young at 25 years old, start working in Caracas Football Club. In that moment, really, I don't know anything about the management of a team. This is my real question about that. But always involved in football as a coach. I was a coach for a younger teams in Caracas. Also worked in futsal. I started in futsal working with players and with different teams in different clubs, social clubs, more than that. And I received an opportunity when I tried to forget the football, I received an opportunity in Caracas Football Club, because I was graduating in as a pharmacist in my university, Santa Maria University. And I tried to work as a pharmacist in Laboratorios Vargas, the same owner of the Caracas Football Club. But in my first month, I received a call from the owner, from the president, Mr. Guillermo Valentiner. And he told me, you will be the general manager of the Caracas Football Club. And I said, what? Yes, I want you to work in that position. And I said, yes. In my mind, I tried to say no, but in my mouth said yes. And the story started in 1996, exactly. And was an amazing time in Caracas Football Club in two periods, because I make a pause or stop, and I work in the Football Federation as a competitions director for 2 years, and then I receive again a call from the owner from Caracas Football Club. If you ask me why I did this pause, it's simple. In my first period, I worked very hard to develop the younger teams and to develop the whole club, because only the team was the first team and tried to win the titles and put in the better players in Venezuela in the first team. We have more than 10 players from the national team in this Caracas Football Club. But my core or my thoughts was in building the younger teams, you know. And sometimes I'm not understanding what the owner want, and then the owner want to win every game, every title we played. He want to win, obviously. But I focused in develop the whole club, and then I make a pause. And when I return it, I understanding what he needs. I start to win championships and win every game that we face. This is my story in Caracas Football Club. But in 2006, I announced my no continue in the club because I have new projects. And Mr. Philip Valentiner, the son of Mr. Guillermo, they start to work with me. And obviously, he want to take more decisions in the club. And understanding that, I prefer build or start new projects for me. And this is my story in Venezuelan football. And then I started in 2007. Three guys called me for a meeting and they told me, hey, Karim, we want to buy Táchira, Deportivo Táchira. And I said, it's a good idea. If you want to lose money. But they say, why? Because I said in this moment that the football is not a great business, strictly in football. And then they told me, why then too much people owned clubs, owned football clubs? I said, it's simple. You can do money by other business around the football, but not specifically in football. And then, for example, if you own a Deportivo Táchira, your connections will be with the governor of the city, will be with the biggest companies in the city, and then you can do a lot of business around the football. And the guy said, okay, you are convinced us to buy the team, but with one condition. It was that I joined them in the club as a partner. Okay, and then I said, okay, yes, let's start, and we build the team from zero. When those owners make the first payment for the club to take the club. I ask, what things you are buying? No, it's Deportivo Táchira. And I said, okay, but how many players, how many balls, how many shirts, how many fields? Nothing. Just the training equipment for one day, not changes. And then I said, it's amazing. No, it's those guys owned a club with a lot of history, but this is the only thing that it costs money, the history of Deportivo Táchira. And then we started in 2007 to build a team with zero players, no pro players, no contracts for the future. And I start to call my people nose and build the club. And then in one year, we earned the championship. You know, in 2008, we was champion. We did a lot of good things. not only myself, it was a very good team working with me. Juana Suarez, for example, Mino Feboli, and the owners in this moment, Rufo John, Camilo Menache, Carlos Sayeg, and was amazing in less than 1 year to earn a title.
And in what year did your time at Deportivo Táchira finish?
In 2016.
So 2016. You were able to win 3 league titles during your time at Deportivo Táchira?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many league titles did you win during your time at Caracas?
5.
5. Okay. Wow. So eight titles in total during your time as a sporting director. And yeah. when you look back at your periods at Caracas and Deportivo Táchira, do you have fonder memories from one than the other? Is there a time in your career that you enjoyed or preferred more?
I enjoy both. It's two big clubs, but two different sense, because Caracas is traditionally is more serious because they are owned by a big company, pharmacist company, and we work as a company, and we have all resources at our hands to work good. Táchira was different because we faced nothing, no office, no balls, as I said a few minutes ago, and we started by zero, and the passion in Táchira is too much different as Caracas. Caracas in their moments was a club that they don't have a lot of fans behind. We built it, a lot of fans, we built it, a lot of publicity, and we did some things to engage people to the stadium, and they grow, obviously. And with the wins, with the titles, this was easy. In Táchira, it's totally different. Is the passion move everything, every decision that you will take, you have to think in the passion on the club, in the fans, in the media, and it's amazing. I learned from both clubs a lot, and right now I think in the two clubs, I think in different things, different moments, and different sense that move me and make me very, very happy. It was a very happy days for me.
So from being a sporting director of Venezuela's two biggest clubs, and in those moments as well as today, do you think those two clubs remain the, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch, they remain as the model that other clubs in Venezuela should try to follow? Because particularly in the past 2 years, with the difficulties of COVID, as well as the difficulties inherent in Venezuela in recent times, we've had the league bloat to 21 teams and now dropped down to 16 for the following season. And clubs really struggle organizationally off the pitch with finances. Do you think Caracas and Deportivo Táchira are templates to emulate?
Yeah, there are definitely the models for the for our football, for the Liga Futebol, is the two best teams. As I said, there are different clubs work differently. They have a different history. They have a different minds. If you see how for the 2022 build the club, Táchira is totally different from Caracas. Caracas is always tried to remain the idea to develop young players and try to sell to other better leagues. And Táchira always think in win the title. Every year they build a team for this thing, not for sell players. If sell players, it's okay, but it's not a consequence for the for the main idea is for the club.
Mm-hmm. And after your career as a sporting director, we've seen both of those clubs win titles, Caracas in 2019 and Deportivo Táchira, like I said, reigning champions in 2021. So the league dropping down to 16 teams wasn't a decision of the league. It wasn't like the league said, okay, next season we'll have 16 teams. This was a consequence of some teams not meeting licensing and other teams not paying debts that they owed. So it was a natural wastage, if you like. But a lot of people are quite positive about the league becoming smaller, that it should make it more competitive. There's less gulf between the top and bottom. What do you think about the new format?
I am one of them. I think it's good for our league. And also, I think that have to be lower to be more competitive. And I think the number is 12, no more than 12. We are not prepared to have a very good league with more than 12 clubs. And almost for 6 or 10 years, you know. And then if other clubs organize a very good second league, and the clubs grow up and do better things, we can think about to have a league with more clubs, okay, 16. But it's okay, it's a normal process. You cannot cut a lot of clubs in 1 year. I think 5 was a good and right decision at this moment, but other clubs like Mineros de Guayana, for example, was a lot of troubles, and they found a savior and somebody to put a lot of money and recharge the club, because not for this club was the license problem, because they have a very good stadium, good facilities, but they have too much debt in the past and try to fix all of these things. No, I think it's good. It will be a very good league with 16 teams this year. I think they will be more competitive. And but the only issue that I does not like it, it was the rule. For me, it was a very bad decision. I find that in the last 12 years, the rule was impressive, helping clubs selling players, helping players in his development, and helping everybody involved in football, not only for the agents, not only for the clubs. I think the rule is in the mind of each father that have a son playing football, because it is an opportunity to know if your son at 16 years old can play football as a professional or no. Right now, with no rule, you have to wait until 19 or 20 years old to know if your son of one player of the club can be a professional player. You know, because there are a lot of hesitate in these ages when you know. When you try to know about your future, if you have to study, if you have a chance to play professional football. With the rule, what happens with the rule? When you know that you have an opportunity to make your first game 16 or 17 year old, you prepare from 14, and in your mind, maybe since 12 years old. But right now, even the players are playing in this moment, born in 2003, 2004, they think that is a bad situation for this player, because what they gained in the last year, they will lose. I know everybody said, or a lot of people said, that if a player is good, they will play as a younger. I think no. Too much players, if you don't give this chance to play, this chance to get in the pitch and the show what you can do, and wait making mistakes in 2, 4, or 6 games, you will not grow. And you have a lot of duties in your mind that it will be my profession or not. In the past, we lose a lot of players, very good players I saw in the schools, like La Salle, San Agustin, and Loyola, and other schools that make great football with great coaches, with great facilities, but these players, they don't have opportunity to play in the first team, to play in professional teams. And for me, too much quickly, I have some examples that was bad for the younger guys. For example, Caracas Football Club just signed a contract with the Ecuadorian player born in 2001. It's only 20 years old. And what we are doing, we are developing players from other countries. What we are doing, really? And then this is a position that if you see, Bonsu also is a young guy. Aquiola is also a young guy. And then another one, 3 players playing in as a forward in the positions that the players cost too much money than others,
yeah.
You know, and what we are doing now, when we go to play the next qualification, World Cup qualification under 20, you will see a lot of players with only 5 or 6 games in professional leagues. In the past, when we played the under 20, we had almost 7 or 8 players playing outside from Venezuela. And right now, no. If you think right now, the only player 2003 playing outside Venezuela is Winkelmann Carmona. No more. And if you draw the next national team under 20, you have to put Ronaldo Chacon, Andres Miki Romero, Telasco Segovia, David Teguez, Jose Riasco, René Rivera, Winkelmann Carmona, Angelo Lucena, Joan Micolta, and what else? This is good players, but the best players is Telasco and Ronaldo Chacon playing in Liga Futbe. And those guys has right now 40 games in first division. Next year, we'll have probably 60 games at least. And then this mark a big difference when you compete against Colombia, that the players not play professional games at 18 years old. Too much players, the number is very short. And then against Bolivia, the same thing, against Paraguay, Chile, and all countries from South America. And then this is that we find to close the bridge, to close the hole between the other countries that are with very good performance, as you know, against us. Right now, my problem is that what will happen with that? 2003 is the year for the next qualification, but what will happen with the 2005 in the 2025 qualification? How many games will play these players in competitive way in this qualification? It's too hard for us. And it's not the same thing that you play in the second team, in the tournament for the second team, with no visibility, with no crowds, with no pressure, with no players in the first division against you, because right now our players, when played as a rule, play playoff games that was hard in the last year. The final playoff was a very, very good and with the high level. It was not easy games. And these guys played this kind of games. And you think Ronaldo Chacon, also Mickey Romero, Telasco Segovia, playing higher level. Also Chacon, for example, playing the final is the best game in any country in the world. You know, it's the final, and he played the final, played 90 minutes in this level. And this will be the difference between these players that played a higher level against players in 2025 with no professional games. Mm-hmm. It's totally different. And then it's a lot of things that I can talk with you a lot that that impact this rule. A lot of things. Also, for example, the agents. We as an agent, if we know that a player have 16 years old, we signed this player at 16 years old because we see that he have opportunity to play as a professional player at 18 years old. Right now, no. Right now, if you sign a player at 16 years old, maybe he get 20 and he don't play professional games. And how you work about that? How you convince MLS or Argentinian League or European League that a player with no games in first division with 19 years old have to buy and have to pay with a lot of money? We as an agents, we show MLS teams. I said MLS team because it's right now our first market. This is the really thing right now. But also in Europe, if you show Ronaldo Chacon have 50 games and have 14 goals and have 14 assists, is a different price, and the other team see you as a different way.
Yeah, and it's one question I had off of the back of that rule being scrapped is that, you know, we've had the rule in Venezuelan football for 14 years, and I was wondering if the obligation may be now an ingrained habit. So I asked on Twitter. So Venezuelan football fans, do you expect the majority of head coaches to continue starting at least one under 20 player per game, even though there is now no obligation to? And 100 people responded, 53 people said yes, and 47 people said no. It was very, very divided. Do you think coaches will continue to play under 20 players even though the obligation is gone?
Definitely no. Definitely no. Maybe in the beginning of the tournament, maybe, because your position as a coach is not in doubt. It's okay. Everybody support you in your position. But what happens in the middle of the tournament when you have expectations with your coach, with your club, to be in the first five positions in the table, and you are in the 10th position, or you have a position that you can go to the second league? What happened with that? When it's a normal situation, I'm not talking bad about the coach. Maybe if I was a coach, I do the same thing. If my position is in problem, if I will lose my position, my job, just to put a young guy, I'm not putting him. Obviously, I'm not used the rule, or I'm not used that. And when you not obligate nobody to put a player, it's thing that the person that faced that have to convince it that the player is good to put the player. But what happens if you see the market, the Venezuelan market, you see any young guy 2003 was moved from a team for another team? I'm not see one example of that. I'm not see. And then what happens? All of the clubs signed players 1919 or older than. And then this is that show us that the young guys is not be the first option for the clubs. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sure Telasco Segovia is a starter in Lara, in Caracas, in Táchira, in Chelsea. Okay, he's an amazing player. Also Chacon, also Romero. Okay, this is right. But the other ones, I think no.
Yeah, and I see that, like, that obviously the under 23 league that's coming in is being spoken of as a replacement for the rule, and obviously, in my opinion, it's not a direct replacement. One didn't need to replace the other. Liga Footbay hasn't had a functioning reserve league for, I think, since 2019 because of COVID in 2020 and 2021. And this reserve league is going to be an under 23 league. But you highlighted earlier in one of your earlier answers that this league isn't going to be visible. You know, a lot of the under 19 games and under 17 games from regionalized leagues in Venezuela, they're not on Instat, they're not on Y Scout. If they're visible, it's because the clubs themselves have put them on YouTube. But a lot of recruitment is lazy. If footage and stats aren't provided on Y Scout or an Instat, recruiters don't look, clubs don't look. They're not going to sit on YouTube looking at under 19 games in Venezuela. On the whole, that isn't going to happen. So whilst the under 23 league might be good within Venezuela, I think what will happen is you'll get players playing in that league until an older age. So then they're debuting in the first team at an older age. And then by the time they would have hit the same level, they'll be 23 or 24. And at that point, you also get recruiters say, if they're that good, they wouldn't still be in Venezuela at 23 and 24. It's like they discount players if they're still in Venezuela by that age. I think that's one possible consequence of this change. Another thing I suggested is that if the under 20 rule was going to be scrapped, it should have been replaced by something else, not the under 23 league, something that still affects the first teams. And what I proposed on Twitter for people to have their say on is that you could have had a rule where each starting 11 needed to have at least three homegrown players, regardless of their age, homegrown. And by homegrown, I mean players that have either had 3 years development at that club prior to the age of 21, so they're youth products, or that player is currently under 20. Because I think with that rule, it would have kept or even heightened the importance towards youth development and exposure, whilst putting an increased responsibility on clubs to build sustainable and meaningful academies and youth setups. Because it would have allowed, you know, Caracas, for example, Leo Flores is 25, 26, but he would have classified as homegrown because he had 3 years at the club. Echeverria is 22, but would have been homegrown because he had 3 years at the club prior to his 21st birthday. So it would have kept the pressure on clubs home growing players and developing and keeping players, but maybe would have taken off some pressure of the player having to be a certain age. Now it's happened and we're going to see the consequences, the under 23 league and the lack of the rule. But what one thing I wanted to discuss with you before we have to wrap this podcast up in 4 minutes is, after your experience as a sporting director, what motivated you to step into the world of football agency? And maybe you've already highlighted some of the challenges that you have as an agent, particularly with this youth rule, but also what are the challenges that you think are almost unique to Venezuelan football agents?
Okay, let me tell you something about the under 23 league. I agree with you, I'm not believing in this league as a league to sell players, because as you said, they don't broadcast with more than one camera, and for the scouts or sporting directors, it's a very bad to watch a game in YouTube with one camera, with no real competitive games. You know, it's for me a disaster. And the second league, the under 23 league, is good, but not scrap the rule. Okay. This is my big idea. And then we can be too much creative how we can do or what we're gonna do to really develop players. But this creative was in our hands and we lose it. The rule was good and perfect. As I said 2 years ago, the rule was perfect. In 12 years, what happens? Nobody studied what happens with the rule. How we can improve the rule? How we can change it? Maybe we can change the year. Maybe we can change how we play it. How's the substitution? How, whatever. But not cut definitely the rule. Also because at this moment, I'm not here a really, really definition for what they was deleted. Only suppose that, you suppose because that, the coaches suppose that, the club suppose that. But when I tried to install the rule in 2007, I make a big presentation explaining all clubs what are the benefits for the rule. And to scrap the rule, just one decision in 5 minutes. You know, there are not studied, it's my opinion. You know? But we have to wait. We have to wait what will happen, what the clubs do, what the coaches do about that. I know in this year, maybe still players, young players, because was developed in the last 3 years, okay? And then they have to maintain and to put to play games in professional league because they developed in the past, okay? But my concern is for 2023, 2024, and for the future. I hope and I wait the people did that change this decision and we back to rule for the next years, because we was a model for the other countries. If you remember, Colombia, for example, was the rule. And when Peckerman came to Colombia, they also scrapped the rules and they changed things, have a problems to go to the World Cup, have a problems to develop players, have a lot of problems. For us, that we are the number 9 or number 10 in South America, was a very, very good thing, because they bring us a lot of opportunities for sell players, for give more attractive our league and to produce more money. I think that about the rule. As an agent, your question, Venezuela is for us as an agent, it's a hard challenge, because outside and in the leagues, they really don't believe in Venezuelan players. You have to convince, you have to talk, you have to invite them, you have to show how the players develop, you have to put a very good examples, and also with that, the price of the players is less than others, and maybe our players are best than others. And then, for example, Inter Miami bought a winger from Millonarios by $3 million, Emerson Rodriguez. And if you put his statistics with Ronaldo Chacon, he does not have better statistics than Chacon. And for Chacon, we'll pay $1 million, and for this player, $3 million. It's an example, it's not the really. The Colombian player was sold in $3 million, okay? What was the last player, the last Venezuelan player sold in this price? I'm not remember, no one. The best player sold was Ronald Vargas, 2.4. million, but then the players cost, the Venezuelan player, the cost is around 1 million. Even Soteldo, when he went to Chile, was for $600,000. Okay, the second sale after Venezuela, it is huge. It is okay. He sell it to Santos in a very good money, and this Santos for MLS, a very good money, as Otero, for example. But directly from Venezuela to outside, the price for best players, it's around 1 million. And I think this is for maybe for the kind of our league. We need to improve our league. We need to improve our broadcast. Yesterday, I saw Santa Fe Junior de Barranquilla, and if you strictly watch the game, what happens inside the pitch is not different for our football. It's not different. You not see different things. You don't see stars. You don't see cracks. You don't see anything. But the makeup for the league is totally different. The product when you watch in TV is totally different. Why? Because it's 24 cameras. It's not fences. It's with a lot of colors in the pitch. It's a very nice put it the spots. Just our final was a very good show. Our final Caracas Táchira, everybody watched in TV. They said, wow, amazing what they do. But we need more games like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I actually didn't see the final because I was in the stadium. So I missed what you're talking about, but I do know what you mean. And, you know, it's other things like, for example, I know it wasn't League of Foot, babe, but watching the Uruguay-Venezuela game earlier this week and Venezuela-Bolivia last week, just even the fact that the games aren't transmitted in HD is a problem, I think. It's silly things, but like I said, a lot of recruitment can be lazy. And if the video footage is poor quality or the angle's bad, they don't watch, or it doesn't show the player in their best way.
But let me tell you something. You in Venezuela watch in standard definition, but the rest of the world is watching in high definition.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Picking up on what you said about Yerson Chacon, Ronaldo Chacon, the same player, and Telasco Segovia, it'd be really interesting to see when they do leave Liga Footbay, which I think will be sooner rather than later. What they leave for in terms of, the structure of the deal and their transfer values, because I think they are the two reference points for the next generation players, both who got their debuts under Peckerman against Bolivia. But that is all we have time for today. Kareem, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we can have you back again, because it wasn't just nice to interview you, but it was an education on Venezuelan football. I think our listeners will very much enjoy listening to this. Thank you so much again, and thank you to everyone listening. Goodbye.
Thank you, Jordan. Sorry for my bad English. It's not perfect, but I tried to do my best.
No, it was good. It was very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.